Tonight on Arena, the RT Short Story Competition is back. The three judges are here with their top tips, and we preview Toni Collette in the new Prime series, The Power. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Yes, it is that time of year again when we ask you to get your typewriter out and your creative brains in gear, as tonight we are launching the RTE Radio 1 Short Story Competition. Every year, this competition highlights the best of new Irish writing for radio. Many of the past winners and shortlisted winners have gone on to national and indeed international acclaim, including Liz Nugent, Sarah Gilmartin, Noel O'Connor, Chris Benchy and Claire Keegan. And there is prize money. The overall winner will receive €5,000, second place €4,000, third place getting €3,000. There are further prizes for the remaining runners-up, and all 10 shortlisted stories will be published on RTE Culture, as well as being read by the best of Irish acting talent and broadcast here on RTE Radio 1. But before you turn off your radio and go off running to computer to start your story and the potentially winning entry, you might just want to listen to my next three guests, the judges for this year's RTE Radio 1 Short Story Competition. Returning as judge this year is writer and filmmaker Ferdy McConnell. He's joined by novelists Claire Kilroy and Kathleen McMahon, and delighted to have all three of them with me on the programme this evening. Ferdy, as I said, you're returning this year. So what was the big takeaway for you from last year's competition in terms of the shortlisted stories, the 10 shortlisted stories as it was back last year as well?
Well, we picked the 10 and we liked them, we loved them, and we fought over them and all the rest of it. But hearing them brought to life gave them a new dimension. And I kind of, my takeaway from it is, anyone who writes a short story and then doesn't read it to themselves just before they send it in is missing out a little bit, because it enhances your story. It doesn't take anything away from it. You might make a few judicious cuts. You might change something in it, but it's a fantastic thing. And it was kind of like Electric Picnic for the years, literary style, hearing those wonderful stories all being read over the weeks, you know, over the week before of the competition. And then they hear the three winners
because all three winners, all 10 of them are broadcast over the period of time in and around the announcement of the winner. Let's listen to just a short extract, in fact, from last year's winning story, Big Why, Little Why, by Brendan Killeen. Father and son visiting an art gallery in Madrid. Something strange happens to a mirror painting in the adjoining room. Andrew Bennett is the reader here.
There is a splashing commotion behind them, and people turn to see a great puddle forming at the bottom of the now largely empty frame in the adjoining room, where Miro's man with pipe was framed. The pale, grey-blue puddle reforms itself as an amoebic blob and starts to make its way with great effort to the area in front of Guernica, where it eventually stops. The wife stifles a scream and grabs her startled husband's arm. Man with pipe says something in muffled Spanish into the ground. Nobody understands. The blob repeats itself louder. "Help me," the blob finally says in heavily accented English.
And that's Andrew Bennett there. The wonderful Andrew Bennett has had such a successful year since reading that story last year. Part of Colleen Kuhn, of course, the Oscar-nominated film. But there he was reading from last year's winning story in the RTE Short Story, Radio 1 Short Story Competition, Big Why, Little Why, by Brendan Killeen. And Kathleen McMahon listening in Galway this evening. Kathleen, when you hear Andrew reading that story there, what a joy it must be for an author, and I know Brendan Killeen echoed this, to hear your work read by an actor of Andrew Bennett's stature, because all of the stories are read by actors of that stature. It really is an added bonus, isn't it?
Oh, amazing. I mean, when you write on a page or on a laptop, you're only seeing it really as a one-dimensional thing, even though you're creating it. And then to hear somebody else give a different cadence to words, or to really, you know, give something an extra role as they're reading it, is, I think it makes you aware of the possibilities of what you're working with, the material that you're working with, which you may not indulge yourself almost enough as you're writing to think about. And that's the joy of this particular vehicle the Frances McManus competition, that the stories are not just to be written and read, but to be listened to. And I think it really brings out layers in dialogue, layers in descriptions that even the writer themselves will find amazing when they hear it. So I think that's really good advice to people who are entering the competition, to read your story. You know, Anne Tyler reads her novels from start to finish out loud to herself before she submits a draft. And many, many writers will tell you this. You'll hear things in it when you read it out loud that you can't see on the page. And it really is a huge help in editing, you know.
And do you do it? And never mind the other writers. Do you,
dishing out advice is one thing, doing it yourself is another thing altogether. But do you know, I think that story, that the winning story from last year that you just played is a really good example. And I listened to the whole thing again last night. It's a wonderful story. And I think it's a really good illustration of what the short story offers that maybe a novel doesn't, and the fun of the short story, and the potential for mischief. And you know that story, it's this surreal story of a figure in a painting getting down off a wall. But I think, you know, something like that can't really be sustained over the length of a novel, but in a short story you can have fun, and I mean serious fun. It can be about something very serious, but you can have great fun with it.
And Ferdy, I know that you have suggested that both Kurt Vonnegut and Ray Bradbury have shaped your views on writing. Have they shaped something specific about the short story? Maybe is Vonnegut maybe towards the more absurdist side of things that we got there in that story?
I think Vonnegut would have been a fellow traveller of our winner from last year, for sure. Taking risks, you know, not doing normal stuff, using the imagination. Bradbury, I love because of, he says things like, you know, you must overdose on fantasy so that reality doesn't kill you, you know, and that sort of approach. So taking risk would be the big takeaway I have from most short story writings. And also reading out loud is fantastic. Yeah, I read everything out loud now, texts, everything. Yeah. It just got into the habit of it. Because once you hear it, when you read it yourself, you kind of hear, you make your own voice, don't you, first, when you're reading it. And then when you hear somebody else, like Andrew Bennett doing it. So that would be one of the main things. And also a character, creating somebody that we can connect to or root for. We don't even have to like them.
Yes.
You know, we just have to kind of know where they're coming from.
Yeah, because I think you've touched on this idea that it's not so much that the character, as you say, has to be likable or that they have to be a villain, but somehow there has to be something to hook us in.
Some connection.
We mightn't even want them to reach their goal, but we have to be interested in what's going to happen.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any badness in the sense, like Chekhov not judging his characters, just putting the elements of story together and letting you do that as the reader or as the listener now as well.
Now, I know that you've chosen some stories, and maybe I can go to you first on this, Kathleen. Mary Lavin's The Haymaking. This is the whole idea of stories having a twist. So just, and she's your grandmother, obviously. Tell us a little bit about this particular story and what strikes you about it.
Yeah, and not even just a twist, but I suppose it's really stating the obvious. But to say, I like a short story to have some story in it, you know? And there, and there to be a moment where the story catches, where there's, you know, a turn. It can be tiny. In this story, it's a wonderful story of two sisters from Dublin, unmarried sisters from Dublin, who go on their holidays to a hotel and they meet a very reticent but eligible farmer. And the girls are great fun and they're playing on the piano and they're the life and soul of the whole thing. And the farmer takes a fancy to one of them and they're not really interested in him, and the girls go back to their lives. And one of them is a teacher, and she's sitting, the story describes how she's sitting one day in this really tedious day in the classroom with the children and the noises and the long, long day of her teaching life. And she sees a poster on the wall of the countryside, you know, those children's posters with the words labelled, the field, the farm, the barn.
All right. Yeah.
And she's received a letter that morning from the farmer that she hasn't even bothered opening. But her eye alights on this poster of the farm with the sun shining on it. And she remembers the letter that she received from the farmer. And on that moment, her life turns. That little glimpse that she gets of what is probably a very naive imagining of rural life and an escape from the tedium of teaching. So that's what I'm talking about, just that delightful little identification of the moments on which our lives turn. And that's very pleasurable as a reader, I think, when you see the writer alighting on that.
Yeah, and I suppose the aspect of the short story that's also interesting in that is we don't know what happens subsequently but a whole life is almost encompassed in that she's made a huge life decision on the basis of a poster on the wall in her
classroom.
Well,
that's the thing. And again, that's back to the bit of fun, isn't it? The fun, the potential for fun in a short story. Yeah, and I think you really touch on something that's important in a short story there. Often you've got just one narrative, one episode, one summer, but if the story can give a vision of a whole life, you know, another story I often think of is Kevin Barry's Across the Rooftops. It's just a couple of pages and it's a party in Cork and these two young people and they're kind of building up to a kiss all evening. And by the end of the story, they're on the roof. It's dawn and finally the kiss happens. And it's a wonderful story because it builds and builds to this moment. But I think particularly because Kevin Barry makes it about more than just this one kiss. It's the turn of a life. It's the moment that youth was left behind, he tells us. And if the story can, with one sentence, give you reach like that, I think something very powerful happens.
The other aspect, I suppose, for people who are thinking about entering, think, well, I don't really have an idea for a story. Sometimes you can find the idea for a story in your own life, even though that it mightn't be as dramatic as the one that I'm going to talk about here, a David Sedaris story that you have chosen, Now We Are Five, which is a terrible sadness, a huge event in the life of a family where they were six
one kids,
of,
one
of them died by suicide.
Yeah.
But Sedaris has always mined his own life.
Always, yeah. And he got famous by writing a story about being an elf in Macy's at the age of 33, working for the Christmas, you know, thing. And it broke him through into a new kind of situation. And he's a comic writer. That's how he's known. He's known as a writer of comedy. And if you've ever seen him, I would almost say in concert, because it's like, they're like gigs. I saw him at the National Concert Hall. It's hilarious, but there's a darkness in you.
Yeah.
And he brings it out. And this story, Now We Are Five, is... it's beautiful, it's funny, it's odd, it's commemorative, but also it talks about family life in a way that we might be used to thinking back on, say, some of the writers like Twain and people, in this beautiful American vernacular, this straight, direct language. Mm. It is a sad story, but it's how you write about it, how you deal with it, how you use the language to create it. And Sedaris would be, the reason I picked something like that is that you wouldn't normally say, I read a great story about, and I don't even want to name the element, but it's Now We Are Five is a brilliant title. It's resonant.
Yeah.
And you can read the story several times. You can get something else from it.
Because when that line appears in the story, Now We Are Five, it's hugely poignant because it kind of is the climax of an entire, whatever, five or six pages of writing that we've had before that. Claire Kilroy, I can't believe this. Claire is with us. And you are a great fan when it comes, now I don't know if it's writing novels as well as writing short stories, Claire, of the empty page sitting in front of you. It's a great starting point, you said, just the blank page.
Well, what else is there? was it yourself quoting Ray Bradbury or was it?
Is it fair?
I thought that was an amazing quote that I hadn't heard before, that you jump off the cliff and
make your own wings and
figure out how to fly once you're falling. So it is that just the faculty you work with is the human imagination. You just sit down and see what it's going to do. You know, it's not a very nice way of working because, another quote was, and it's a quote I can't quote because I'm not good at quoting, but it's Virginia Woolf talking about uncertainty is the medium in which we exist, whether we like it or not. And I don't like uncertainty, but I don't see another way to approach this. So you, as Ray Bradbury says, you jump off the cliff.
And do you think, is the short story different from the novel in that respect? I mean, can you sit down with a short story? Is it easier to sit down with a blank page and almost let one sentence flip into whatever the next sentence is going to be and another little jump off the cliff after you've two sentences? Can you do that more in a short story than you can in a novel?
I think there's no easy way to write anything, to be honest. And it's almost like your imagination will dictate what's going to come.
Mm.
So you don't know what's going to come. You may sit down to enter the Francis McManus Award and come out with a novel. You don't know what, or a play. Mm. You don't know what's going to happen. It's such a variable faculty, the imagination.
Yeah, in fact, Kathleen, I think you were telling a story about, is it one of your own stories that you had written and then you were doing some gardening in and around some wild garlic and that changed the story. You had to go back and do a little bit further work on it. That's your story, isn't it?
That's it. I mean, I do a lot of my best writing when I'm walking the dog or when I'm weeding the garden. And I think, you know, absolutely what Claire says about the blank page. I mean, in the end of the day, that's what you do. You sit down at your desk and the paper's in front of you. But I'm a big advocate as well of walking away from it if there's nothing coming, you know. And your ideas are there. If you're a writer, they're forming in your head. So that's what I would say to people who are thinking of applying is, you know, it doesn't have to be a surrealist story. It doesn't have to be wildly imaginative. It can be something that's just beautifully observed or a description that is something you've observed that is real and true that forms the basis of a story. You know, weeding in the garden can get those thoughts going. You do have to return to the page sooner or later. But
yeah.
I mean, one of the stories that I picked when you asked us which ones we love is a story by the American writer Lily King. And her latest collection is called Five Tuesdays in Winter. Beautiful, beautiful writer. And she's very much a descriptive writer. And there's an incredible power in just nailing the perfect word, the perfect sentence. It may sound very obvious, but I think for the reader, there's an immense pleasure in reading something that the writer has just captured so perfectly, and it creates a contract between the reader and the writer that is, you know, very loyal. You find a fan if you describe something that somebody will understand perfectly. Lily King, in that story, When in the Dordogne, describes, a father lifting the child out of the bath, and the child remembers his naked skin against the father's wool overcoat. And
wow.
You know, the second you read that, she's got you. It's just perfect. There's a young man swimming in a pool and the cheeks of his ass go tight, then loose, tight, then loose. And I love that.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes the writing is the thing.
Yeah, it's simply what's there. It's not that there's some big pushing forward the plot or anything like that. It's just a good sentence that you enjoy reading. You've chosen a real master of the short story. If you think of The Dead, I suppose the collection, the James Joyce collection, I mean, you could pick any story in it, but you've specifically chosen Araby, Claire Kilroy.
Yeah.
What was it about that story? Just remind us of the basic setup, first of all.
Very, very short story. It's one of the earlier ones, so it's one of the child ones. And it's about a boy. We don't know how old he is, but he's very eloquent. I'd say he's maybe 13. And he has a bit of an infatuation with the girl across the street, Mangan's sister. She's older. And she mentions this bazaar called Araby that she can't go to, but he can. So he has to wait for his uncle to come home. He wants to bring this gift to Mangan's sister, who Joyce, when he really goes into lyricism, he does it like no one else, you know. And it's funny, I reread it this morning because I knew it'd be coming here. And this would be something I would have read first as a teenager and reread. He's one of the few writers I go back to because there's so much there and I see something different there every time. But today I realise it's the death of childhood. That's what this is. And also the lyricism of the language. Joyce, especially with something like Francis McManus, which is verbal, it's going to be read aloud. At the end, the boy looks into the darkening gallery and sees himself as a creature driven and derided by vanity, and he feels anger and anguish. And it's that driven and derided anger and anguish. It's real use of language in a rhythmic and beautiful way.
A really muscular language as well,
yes.
Isn't it? That he uses. Are you in the case of your own writing, even in the case of the novels? I know your fifth Soldier will be coming to us in May. Are you a reader out loud of your own work?
No.
Another a very fine admission from you there.
No, but here I'll say this. You have to give readings. It's when you figure out which passage you have to read out in front of an audience, you find errors. So I should read my work aloud, but I don't.
And I guess that what you're saying about that defining the passages that you read out in front of audiences, suddenly you see the ones that really lift up off the page.
Yes.
You know, and it'd be interesting to see if readers were asked to choose passages, what they would choose.
Yes.
You know,
it is a different animal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And that was a huge aspect, I think, for you, Ferdy, yeah. last year to hear this. I mean, I remember doing precisely that with the 10 shortlisted stories, both listening to them and reading them.
Yeah.
It's a very different experience, but
it's very different.
Very complementary experience.
Oh, I think it's a great, I mean, I think anyone entering or thinking of entering the story, go for it. Be brave, you know, get in touch with your imagination, write the first sentence. It should be a blank page, I agree with you. First sentence, it doesn't matter how crazy it is. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be a draft when you finish it. And then go over it and read it out loud and change it and go for it, because I think this is a great competition. I think the 10 prizes, you know, not only do you, you know, you get a cash prize, which is fantastic for any writer anywhere, but then you get they're brought to life in two different ways. They're broadcast, they're published, and then they're brought to life by these voices.
Talk to me a little bit about another one of the stories that you chose, Ferdy, which is Wednesday. This is from Wendy Erskine. Connection, Dance Move.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is. This book is so good that I've only read three of the stories, and I'm keeping the others for, you know, special occasions like at weekends and when I'm off, because it's just terrific. But the first one, the one I really love, is called Mathematics. And this is the first sentence. The drawer beside Roberta's bed contained remnants of other people's fun. And that's there's more to it, but just that opening line.
Yeah.
And then you're brought in. And it's about a woman who is working as a cleaner for dodgy types somewhere, you know, on this island. And her job is to clean out very dodgy hotel rooms. And she's driven there by a dodgy chap, and she works for a dodgy chap and is paid. But she's had a fall and she's hurt herself and she's challenged. There's a cognitive dysfunction. Mm. And mathematics is one of the themes around one of the riffs that's played throughout. But one day she opens a hotel room door and there's a little girl in a school uniform, and she has to decide what to do. And there's nobody else. She has the keys. So what does she do with the little girl? And so she kind of takes her to the school the next day, and she ends up connecting with the little girl. Now, I'm not going to go into the second half of it, but the only thing I can say about this book is that I was seeing it, listening to it, hearing it. I was in the painting of it. I was in the music of it. It was fantastic. And it's very sparse. You know, there's not that much decoration, if you like. Anyway, it's a fantastic story, and it's called Mathematics. I think it's been warmly received around the place.
Tosha, talk to Crow Fresh and Gulche Tilch. We'll find most of found or then you again scrive
Nor Askelige
Toshan
Sakelige. Last year, a terrific Irish language story on. And Canavernuk Uignuk, the most bonkers story I have ever
read. The lonely skeleton type to give it a,
And it's Eanthuk bonkers is the way I would describe it. And that won third prize for Nicola Crean, and that was fantastic. And I can remember, I laughed at that so much, Askelige. I laughed at it when it was, you know, in the page in front of me, and I laughed at it when I heard it. And I would laugh at it today. I've listened to it about four or five times since. Yeah. And I was one of the judges. I heard it loads of times as well, you know, so... terrific. So, Tafalcha Riv,
Screen Order, Fresh. One other thing I wanted to ask you about, Claire, because I was interested as I saw you saying this, that editing does not necessarily mean making it shorter or cutting it back.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you stare at the page. I am big into editing. I find it almost as creative as the actual inventing of the first draft, but it's when you're creatively freest, because you're sort of safe, you have a structure. And when you sit down and really interrogate each word by word, sometimes a secret trapdoor can fly open in a sentence and lead you down another route that you didn't know was there. And it can be very fruitful and exciting and a gift, you know. So I always say to people, edit, then edit it again.
And just to go back to you, Kathleen, on your wild garlic and the weeding in your garden, this was a story that you added the garlic into. Am I right in thinking now that you think it might be the first chapter of a novel?
Well, I haven't decided. It's either a long short story or the first chapter in a novel. Yeah, I mean, it started out with almost just a fragment. And I suppose there's a difference between a fragment and a short story of a priest saying a mass For a gay man who died, and so there's the discomfort of the congregation around how will the priest handle this, and you know, will he pass remark in any way on this man's life and the way he chose to live his life? So that was the initial story. And it just never seemed to me to have quite enough to it. It seemed that it was only a fragment and it needed more. And that's when I found myself weeding wild garlic in the garden and imagined that this priest was very troubled by everything that's happening in the church, and he's weeding out the wild garlic while the other fathers have gone to see the Pope in the Phoenix Park. And his thoughts are very much turning over on each other. And he's very troubled. So there's more to it. So yeah, I mean, I agree with Claire. Edit, edit, edit. And I think in a way, this is the really interesting thing about the short story. There's so many possibilities in it that don't really exist for the novel. In a short story, you can end up working on it forever almost. You could write a piece and then think, oh, well, maybe there's a bit more to that or a bit before that. And, you know, most people, when they've finished a novel, you never want to go back to it. I prefer to eat it than read it again. But the short story is kind of, you wouldn't hesitate to go back in and try to make it better all the time.
All right. And so you're an inveterate reviser then of the short story at any rate, and an eater of novels, I've just found out. Ferdy, we better give out the specifics of what do people have to send in? What is the word count? How do you actually enter?
Yeah. Story should be between 1,800 to 2,000 words, mainly for limited
radio.
For radio.
Yeah.
Closing date is Friday, 26th of May. All the details are on the website, rte.ie/writing to enter. The top prize, well, the prizes are there. I could, it's 5,000 euros for the winner, 4 for the second, and 3 for the third. And then there's 250 euro for each winner of the 10 winners. And then, of course, they're broadcast. Stories can be in Irish and English. And I think it's free to enter. That's another great thing.
That's another great thing about it all. Well, listen, thank you all three for sharing your thoughts. And there's lots for people to mull over there. But the basic one is get to the typewriter, get to the word processor, or pick up the pen, whatever way it is you do it. Start with a sentence. That's the first point. Ferdy McConagh, Claire Kilroy and Kathleen McMahon, they're the judges for this year's RTE Short Story Competition. Thanks very much to all three of you for being with us. Entries are now open. The closing date is Friday, May the 26th. And as Ferdy was saying, you can get full details on rte.ie/writing. rte.ie/writing.